You've heard of mining the Earth for diamonds or coal, but how about mining natural resources on an asteroid? It might sound like the topic of a sci-fi novel, but at a press conference this week at the Seattle Museum of Flight, a group of technology entrepreneurs announced they had created a company called Planetary Resources that will indeed mine asteroids. The first step is to launch telescopes that will search for asteroids with abundant natural resources. After that, the entrepreneurs hope to build robot-controlled spaceships to mine the materials, or at least that's the plan. Skeptics believe the operation will be too pricey and the technology needed to do it is too far off. But if it were possible, what would the business look like? And how does this tie into the industry of space exploration? For that, we turn to Rosanna Sattler. She's a Boston attorney whose specialties include outer space law. Rosanna, what else would asteroid mining entail?
Basically, it would involve extracting minerals and water from an asteroid.
And why would we want to do that?
Yes. Well, the water is the most important because liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen are what propels spacecraft. And the idea is that rather than carting up the water to a fuel depot, which would then refuel a vehicle that would continue on, you can actually have the water on the asteroid, extracted from the asteroid for a much less amount of money. And that would allow these spacecraft to go on to Mars or deep space or even the moon at a lower price.
Is there also any plan to bring some water or natural resources back to Earth?
I don't think there are any plans to bring back water. But the idea is, for example, rare earth minerals like platinum that are used in industrial processes. All the platinum we have on the Earth actually comes from asteroids crashing into the Earth.
Really?
And so the idea would be to find the platinum on the asteroids, mine it, and bring it back for industrial purposes.
Now, there are big-name people involved in this project. Google's co-founder Larry Page, Google's chairman Eric Schmidt, the chief software engineer of Microsoft, film director James Cameron. How did this collection of powerhouse people get together on this?
Well, Eric Anderson, who is one of the founders of Planetary Resources, is also a founder of something called Space Adventures. And he and Mr. Simoni...
This is the Microsoft Office chief software engineer.
His company, which is Space Adventures, enabled Mr. Simoni to go to the space station twice. And there are other entrepreneurs who are working on vehicles to either go up to the space station or go into low Earth orbit. And these individuals all know each other and are very excited about space. And I think it's just a natural magnet.
This idea of extracting resources from asteroids has been proposed since at least the 1990s, I think, but it's basically been dismissed as unrealistic. Why is this one being taken more seriously?
It's the model, really. I like to equate it to the Dutch East India Company, where you have a lot of very, very wealthy entrepreneurs who are not afraid to invest their money and perhaps lose some of it. These individuals are very committed to outer space and have decided that they're going to risk assets to see if they can accomplish this.
You know, I was wondering if this company is going to have to learn how to coexist harmoniously with NASA, whether NASA will say, no, this is our domain.
NASA welcomes this company because one of the things it's going to do is lower the cost of access to space, and it's also going to help NASA get into deep space, particularly if the refueling depots are in space. It will cost a lot less to go into deep space.
And why does NASA want to do that? I guess I wonder if you'll give us a checkup on where we are in our space industry, which has had a lot of budget cuts in recent years.
The old idea of the space program in low Earth orbit is something that I think is mature now and ready to be turned over to the private sector. And NASA acknowledges this will allow NASA to do more science, you know, the Hubble telescope, and also explore Mars, explore Jupiter. That's really the role that they see themselves in.
Rosanna Sattler, you are a lawyer, as we said, and here on Earth, natural resources are usually owned. People have legal rights to them. Are we going to be dealing with similar issues in space? Who owns these asteroids, and can just anyone tap them for resources?
That's a really good question. There's something called the Outer Space Treaty, which says that nobody may own any planet or celestial body. However, the treaty does talk about the use of space. And I would say that the jury is out.
Do you envision a future where the U.S. could be fighting with other countries over rights to asteroids?
I don't really envision that because there are so many asteroids. There are millions of them.
Enough to go around.
I think there are plenty to go around.
Rosanna, how did you get involved in space law? I'm sure many of our listeners don't even know that's a legal specialty, outer space law.
Well, space has always been my passion, and I wanted to hook up my passion with my profession, which is the law.
And of course, to state the obvious, space law doesn't just mean Martians. It means you're doing all the legal things that need to be done for satellites and licensing. I mean, there's a lot of commercial legal work to be done as we work in space.
Yes. I mean, basically, these are companies, they're businesses, they have contracts, they have employees, they need insurance, and they have, as far as business goes, the same issues any other company would have.
And I understand that you got hooked on space when you were a kid.
When I was eight, Sputnik happened, and NASA was formed. I was always glued to the TV set on anything that has happened about outer space, and I still am.
To this day, as enthusiastic as when you were
little. To this day, even more enthusiastic, because now it's a reality that I might actually be able to go.
To space?
Yes, on a suborbital flight.
They're quite expensive now. Richard Branson with his Virgin Galactic company, isn't it a $200,000 trip that he's taking reservations for?
It is, but those are the first trips. And I believe like everything else, you know, the price will decrease. I remember when calculators first appeared, I wanted to buy one. It was $300. And now they come for free, you know, on the back of a ruler. So I do believe, I know of other companies who have a lower price.
Do you think one day you'll get up there?
Absolutely.
You, I know from having interviewed you in the past, actually believe that one day humans might colonize other planets, that we've sort of tapped out where we are here on Earth. Do you still feel that way?
I don't know that we've tapped it out yet, but I think if the population continues to expand the way it has been growing, we'll tap out on natural resources, and I think it's manifest destiny that we're going to find ourselves on other planets.
Rosanna Sattler is a Boston attorney whose legal specialties include space law. Rosanna, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
A quick update to yesterday's story about the Pulitzer Board not awarding a prize in fiction this year. Author Steve Almond told us that omission was fine by him because he thinks we have too many literary prizes as it is.
We've got the National Book Award, National Book Critics Circle Award, and the LA Times Award, and the Story Prize, and the Penn Hemingway, and the Pulitzer.
Well, sorry, Steve, but you can add one more to that list. Tonight, Mayor Michael Bloomberg will announce the winners of the very first NYC Literary Honors. They'll recognize writers whose work and lives have been inspired by the Big Apple. And a correction, yesterday we inadvertently placed author Ann Patchett's bookstore in Louisiana, but as many listeners wrote to remind us, it's actually in Nashville. Our apologies. Back in a minute, here and now.